sweat the technique. Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
He's blank on Branham. Water Brantley. You can force one of them to come out of retirement. They don't have a choice. 9953. I'd also take Brantley if it was Primes, because Astros are closer to a championship. Watt Prime is better, but doesn't contribute to a Super Bowl, probably. I don't know, man. You had a J.J. Watt at his prime, 20 and a half sacks. I think the Texans are Super Bowl contenders.
I think you might be right.
Call me nuts, but I think they are.
Plus, you're still dealing with all the assets you have to kind of use this offseason, from the money to the draft picks. Mm-hmm. And you solve the Grenard problem right off the top and put prime J.J. on the opposite side of Will Anderson Jr. Plus, defensive players are going to go, I want to play there. I want to sign up for that. I mean, yeah, it's hard to say that they wouldn't be Super Bowl contenders if it's prime J.J. on the other opposite of Will Anderson.
Forget how great that dude was. 9271, Watt not playing defensive end in this current Texans team. He would be DT. That makes a difference. I would pick Mike. I don't know why he wouldn't play defensive end, especially he's a gadgety get to the quarterback. Now, you can get creative. Like, Will Anderson played some defensive tackle on pass rushing situations early in the year. He didn't do it much late in the year. They kind of got away from that. Maybe Watt can play some inside on, like, for sure pass rushing situations, but I don't understand why Watt couldn't play defensive end in a 4-3.
He played inside when he was in a 3-4, but if he's coming over to a 4-3, I don't see any reason why he'd be the every down interior defensive lineman. He might, like you said, in sub packages, rotate into the inside, but he wouldn't be there on a regular basis.
Yeah, I don't agree with that text there.
As a defensive coordinator and a defensive mind like a D'Amico Ryans, you don't think he can be flexible? You don't think that he can be creative? I mean, come on.
8818, the answer is J.J. Watt, because for the first time he would be the defense in not being double teamed. I don't know what he meant there, but he said he would not be double teamed and would go to town while Anderson would be getting the double teams. That'd be scary, man. You got Watt on one end, Anderson on the other. Like, I really do want J.J. Watt to come out of retirement. I've been banging that drum for quite a while now. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What is the recent history of acquiring a running back in free agency, say, Brian?
So I was looking at this as, obviously, we've spent a lot of time over the last few weeks talking about different running backs the Texans could sign to free agency from the stars like Saquon and Derrick Henry to, you know, the lower-end guys like an Antonio Gibson and everywhere in between. And I just started to think, and it kind of relates to what we were talking about a couple segments ago with Kyle Tucker and, like, seeing the obvious drop-off as you get into that second contract. And I had a similar thought about running backs. Like, these teams that are spending in free agency on running backs, are they actually getting a return on their investment? Are they actually getting the production that they're paying for? And the numbers, and I only went back 5 years because, you know, every few years in the league kind of shifts and gets further and further away from running. So I thought going back even further than this really wouldn't help the conversation. But over the last 5 years, there's been 58 running backs who have run for 1,000 yards. Only six of those 58, which is 10%, came from running backs who were acquired through free agency. And it's basically every year. Like, this year was actually the most that we've had. Like, three out of the 12 running backs that ran for 1,000 yards were free agent signings, which included Raheem Mostert, and I forget the other two names off the top of my head. But you go back to 2022, it was 1 out of 15. 2021, it was 0 of 7. 2020, it was 0 out of 8. And then 2019, it was only 2 out of 16. And it even goes beyond those 1,000-yard guys. Like, in certain years, I would go all the way to running back 30, and it's a small fraction of those top 20 to 30 running backs, even as you go deeper, that are producing on teams that acquired them through free agency. So going through that and seeing the historical trends, it makes sense. I mean, guys are aging. Just like we were talking about with Kyle Tucker, you know, production drops. Running back is not even really arguably has the shortest shelf life of really probably any position in sports. So I just don't see the value on the return by spending money, especially big-time money, on a free agent compared to maybe bringing back a Singletary on a smaller deal and investing through the draft. The only caveat I would give to that as to why this year might be different is this is by far probably the most star-studded year we've seen from the free agency running back class with Saquon and Josh Jacobs and Henry and Austin Eckler.
Okay, but I'm looking at it, Brian. And I mean,
you got to dumb that down for me.
Yeah,
I heard free agency running back bad.
Yeah, there was a lot there. My big thing is he was talking about that, is I'm looking at it going, who has the most tread left on the tires? Who are the guys like Saquon? he's been dinged up a little bit, but I think that overall, I would think he's got plenty left in the tank. I think Tony Pollard coming off injury is a question mark. I think that Eckler is a guy that we've talked about is on the downside of his career. I think that from a Jacobs perspective, you're at least a little leery of the fact that after 2 years ago when he was unbelievable, last year with the contract negotiations sitting out, everything that happened, he didn't look like the same player. But I would still think he's probably got plenty left. But for all the guys we're talking about, there's not a whole lot of guys where you'd go, as my number, like Henry, I think he's on the downside too, obviously. I think you look at it and go, there's maybe two out there in free agency, top of the list, that where you go, other than that, I don't see a lot of guys. I think you're right. I think you make a great point. I don't see a lot of guys that I put a whole lot of trust in.
Yeah, I wonder how much here, and like Mostert was one of the examples where he went over 1,000. Like, he was more of a value running back. Like, he wasn't top of the market. He was coming off injuries in San Francisco. I think he signed because Mike McDaniel had history with him more than anything else whenever he was in San Francisco. What I'm curious here is the market. Like, okay, your free agency running backs aren't running for over 1,000 yards, but, like, what did they sign for? Because to me, the most important thing whenever you're building a roster and roster management is return on investment. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at, okay, these 1,000 yards is the barometer for these free agents running backs, blah, 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 blah. Okay, like, let's play the numbers here and say that most of them are under 1,000 yards. I see in the show notes here it's 10%. Okay, cool. That's fine. But what am I willing to pay for those odds? You know what I mean? And then what does a 10% look like that did go for over 1,000 yards? So that's where it comes back to the demand for me. Because top-tier running backs in my mind in this free agency class are Saquon Barkley and Josh Jacobs. If I had to lay down a prop bet, do I think that those guys would go over 1,000 yards next year? The answer for me is yes. I don't care that, you know, the past 5 years, there was 10% that did. I think Saquon's running for 1,000 yards next year. I think Josh Jacobs is running for 1,000 yards next year. What's that?
He had a horrible offensive line.
I'm just saying, like, running back, again, more than any other position, is just has such a short shelf life. Even the guys who we consider, I think, or at least you guys consider to be young in this conversation, like Saquon or Jacobs, or at least don't consider them to be past their prime like Derrick Henry, 26 is still old for running back.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Barkley ran for 962 and missed 3 games. So, like, semantics. Like,
and had a horse bleep offensive line.
And both Jacobs and Saquon under 1,000 yards this last
Josh
year.
Josh Jacobs ran for 1,600 both 2 years ago. Like, I mean, you can play both sides
right,
of it.
Right, but there's
like,
eventually going to be a decline. And they were both under – even forget the actual raw total as far as rushing yards.
But this
yardage,
isn't about the previous years. This isn't about last year or 2 years ago. Do you think Saquon Barkley is going to run for 1,000 yards next year?
I do.
I mean, I guess it would depend on situation, but sure, both guys, absolutely. Jacobs and Saquon, were both under 4 yards per carry, too. So it's not just the raw total. It's also seeing their rushing efficiency
but
as they age decrease.
When you're signing free agents, though, it's about what they're going to do in the years going forward, not the years of what they had in the past. So, like, you as a general manager have to evaluate. And, look, the numbers here matter. Like, it's probability. I'm not dismissing the numbers. The numbers absolutely matter. And I understand that, you know, Josh Jacobs is going to be 26. But running backs start to deteriorate once they get closer to 30. There's no doubt about that. But do I think Saquon Barkley is going to run for 1,000 yards? That's a question that I'm asking myself if I'm Caserio. Same thing with Josh Jacobs. But then more importantly than that, if I pay Saquon Barkley $10 million, is he giving me $10 million of value? Because if I don't think he is, the answer is no. Same thing with Josh Jacobs. But if I can get Saquon for $8 million and I think he can give me $12 million of value in production, cool. I'm in on that. Those are the two most important questions. And really, in my mind, the last question is the only one that matters.
Yeah, because you look at it and go, it's scheme, fit, system, and return on investment. So if you think that he's going to a scheme that he fits into, if you feel like that system with an offensive coordinator like Slowik is going to open it up and give him even more opportunities than he's had, he's got a better offensive line, and then you're not signing him for, like, these baseball contracts. We're not going 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Yeah. We're going probably a max 3 years if that's what you're going to stomach. And you're going to, and I think the return investment's going to be there because those two guys in particular still have plenty left in the tank, and their situations weren't ideal last year.
Hey, look, my number for them is probably 10 for both of them. Like, I really don't want to go into double digits for either guy. And a lot of it's for this information that Brian laid out. Mm-hmm. I don't believe, like we were just having this conversation with Tucker. Like, Kyle Tucker is one of my favorite players. I would love for Kyle Tucker to be around for the Houston Astros and producing all the time. But if I take my heart – out of it and think with my head, then it's just a general philosophy I have. I don't want to pay guys into their 30s on long-term deals. I have that same general philosophy with running backs. I don't want to pay running backs when they're approaching 30. But if the rest of the market is also doing that same thing, now can I get value? Because the rest of the NFL knows that signing free agent running backs aren't wise. So does that bring down the value to where now all of a sudden it makes sense to sign those free agent running backs? It's trying to find value in supply and demand. It's trying to find value on what the market is telling you. If the market's like, okay, we're not going to sign Saquon and Josh Jacobs for $12 million, and all of a sudden they become available at $8 million, okay, I can get one of those guys at $8 million on a two-year deal. Okay, I think he's going to produce better than that $8 million. So a lot of times you have to go away from what the market is dictating to find those shrewd moves. So that's why the number here is critical. Saquon
absolutely.
And Jacobs.
Like if the market, because there's so many guys flooding the market, if it becomes depressed and we start to see Saquon and Henry and these guys go for an $8 million AAV,
right,
then I would be willing to change my mind. My overall point is the three or more year deals at an AAV 10 or more. Like that's where I would start to push back, where the return on the investment 100%. And the historical trends show that you're not going to get something worth it in return. But if the market and the supply and demand brings it down to around $8 million, then, and it's a two-year deal, I'd be willing to take that
risk. I think that's where the question's at, because I think we're all on the same page. I think the question is now, what is your best and final?
Right.
What are you willing to do? I think that's where the question's at. Where would it be for you, Blankers?
Well, to me, one more thing before we get into that is that I think from a general manager's perspective, the other question then becomes, are general managers wising up? Now, are you not only using top picks on running backs and not spending the long-term deals on running backs, but are you also now wising up and saying, hey, I'm going to kind of wait this thing out because I don't think a lot of teams are going to invest that much money in a running back. So maybe I can catch a deal because they're not going to be valued as high as we're projecting them to be because the general managers are wising up too.
Yeah.
I think 10 is the threshold. I think you have to come in, and I believe Nick will, with just a outline and a stop gap. This is as far as I'm going.
Yep.
And I think 10 would be the as high as I would go with those top two guys. I'd go probably significantly less on everybody else. But I'm not going to rush right to be the first one knocking on their door to say, I'm going to offer you 10. I would indicate that I want to talk to you, I want to continue talking to you, but I don't want to just commit to 10 because I think there's a good chance that the market dictates that it's going to come down.
I'm right there with you. That's my number two. Like 10 years, not longer than two, or 10 million, not longer than 2 years. And you can do a Fugazi third year, like slap on a third year with non-guarantee, whatever. That means nothing. So like, let's see what the parameters of the deal are before we, like if they sign Barkley next week in a 3 year deal. Okay. Well, let's see what that third year guarantee is, blah, 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 blah. The only team that really has went away from the philosophy of not paying running backs is San Francisco. They traded a lot for Christian McCaffrey, and some people view that differently. Like, some people view the Christian McCaffrey trade for the Niners like, okay, great. Like, this was something that really worked out for them. The huge focus of their offense, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, I'll see other people argue, well, he didn't win a Super Bowl. And to win a Super Bowl, you can't have these top running backs. Like, does that really mean something? Like, is that actually, like, something you're putting value in? Because San Francisco could have very easily won that game, and you can no longer use that point. So is one singular football game going to form your opinion of a top running back being on a Super Bowl winning team because Kansas City for 60 minutes slightly edged San Francisco?
You know, I think the bigger thing is just the overall individual production and the production of the running game as a whole. Because you're right. You look at, like, Mostert, he didn't come on a major deal. He also had, you know, A-Chain, and they ran the ball effectively. They were really effective. I think that if you can get a situation like we talked about with a two-headed monster with two different guys that can be called on depending on who you're playing and how you're playing, that can get you the overall production from your running game, then – mission accomplished. And I'm with you. I believe that Saquon's going to rush for 1,000 yards. I think Josh Jacobs is going to rush for 1,000 yards unless they get some less than team with poor offensive line play or quarterback play that overspends and doesn't think about the fit. But I think those two guys in particular, the production will be there individually, and I think the team won't suffer for it.
I just think sometimes it's team construction, going to your last point, Jeremy, there with Christian McCaffrey. Like, it's not that you can't have the star running back, but if you have the star running back, you're obviously robbing from another position to pay that guy, and it's not really necessarily about the 1 year. Like, you're right, the Niners could very easily have won that Super Bowl, and maybe the conversation changes, but the historical trend is basically, I mean, I just looked it up, the last leading rusher in the NFL to be on a Super Bowl winning team was Terrell Davis in the late 90s. Yeah, I mean, it's been 25-plus years.
I just can't put stock in that when the Niners were one game away. Like, the Niners were one game away from doing that. Like, so that stat just doesn't carry a lot of weight for me. Because it's like, okay, well, because of that one football game that we're going to have this conditioned thought that you can't win a Super Bowl with a highest paid running back. Well, okay, so you're dismissing San Francisco's capability to win it all.
Consider this too, guys. The big thing is, like, it's what they do and when they do it. Like, Green Bay overpaid for Aaron Jones. They paid him $11.5, $12 million a year. And he was hurt during the season. But Green Bay doesn't go as far and have the chance to be in the game and beat leading San Francisco three quarters in to that playoff game after beating Dallas, if not Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones ran his ass off for both of those games, and he was everything and more that any team would have taken and signed up for. They didn't win the Super Bowl, but I don't think they beat Dallas or beat be in the game with San Francisco without Aaron Jones.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. To pay a free agent running back or to not. Also, let's make mock drafts great again. How are we making the Texans better? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. Now, I do want to remind you guys, too, that if you're looking for a gift for your significant other, Doc Linville is also an expert and fantastic at spot treatments, Botox, plastic surgery, and so much more. But the one thing that I have personal experience with is the NeoGraft procedure. It's getting your hair back. And the key word there is your hair. It's not the sprays and the creams and the foams that just mask the problem. It's literally taking your hair from places you will never lose it, and Doc explained it to me. Genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how bald you go elsewhere. He takes some of that, puts it where you need it most. You see it instantly there. It starts growing, getting stronger, longer. 6 to 9 months later, you see the true results, and it is fantastic. You get yourself confidence back because you get your hair back, and you feel great about the coverage area and the way your scalp looks. It's fantastic. And as I mentioned, you get a consultation like I got, but you get it for absolutely free because you listen to us. Just go to 975hair.com right now. Get the information. Sign up for a consultation. No money out of pocket, no commitment from you. Just answers to your questions to see if you might be the next in line for the NeoGraft procedure. I did it. I couldn't be happier with the results. It was painless. I loved every minute of it. And when I saw the results, I was ecstatic. You can be too. Check out 975hair.com.
Locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. He's Blank, I'm Branham. Let's make mock drafts great again. Yesterday, all of you had the option between Laiatu Lato, Troy Fautanu, Cooper DeJean, and Chop Robinson. Who did you guys pick?
I went with Chop.
Yeah, we both went with Chop.
Both went with Chop. I like Latu. He intrigues me. I would have went either he or Chop.
Well, the logic I had was between the two playing a similar position, one guy has injury concerns, the other guy doesn't, and Chop was impressive at the combine as well, and he looks healthy, so I went with him.
Yeah. That's cool. Today, we're using the CBS mock of Josh Edwards. Oh, by the way, the pollsters yesterday, they chose Chop, too. He won 38% of the vote. Latu was second at 32, DeJean at 16, and Fautanu at 14. So Chop was the popular pick yesterday. Today we're using Josh Edwards of CBS Sports, his mock draft, as we make mock drafts great again. His top three go quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. Did you hear Rossini the other day on the Athletic Football Podcast that she had a smart general manager? I thought it was interesting she used the word smart instead of just being like, I had an NFL general manager tell me. Nope, she said I had a smart NFL general manager tell me. It's like, okay, that's weird. But she said quarterback, 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 quarterback is what she was told. I can't imagine.
Four in a row?
And who's the fourth quarterback?
Well, Arizona's got to be trading out then, right?
For sure. Like, they would have to trade out in this scenario. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. But who's the fourth quarterback? Like, is it Bo Nix? Bo Nix is going number.
It's
JJ McCarthy. It'd be McCarthy. You're
I think
right.
It's JJ McCarthy.
McCarthy going fourth?
Like, that's way too high.
He would. He's definitely the fourth quarterback. It slipped my mind for a second. He would definitely be the fourth quarterback. I cannot see a scenario in which JJ McCarthy is the fourth pick of the NFL draft.
I certainly can't either. I think that you could hover and you could find him at the bottom of the top 10 and be just fine. But yeah, I don't see anybody trading up to get JJ McCarthy at four. I think that might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I could see, like, I think he's going to go top 10. Like, mm-hmm. It's trending in that direction. But fourth, I don't see it. Anyways, this one has Caleb Williams first to Chicago, Drake May to Washington. Fingers crossed on that. Jaden Daniels to New England at three, Marvin Harrison to Arizona at four, and then Malik Nabers to to the Chargers at five. Rome Odunze goes to the Giants at six. McCarthy. They project a mock trade with Atlanta. Denver makes the pick here at eight. They go J.J. McCarthy. Other interesting picks along the way. Kenyon Mitchell goes 13. I've seen a lot of people want Kenyon Mitchell to the Texans at 23. That's gonna require a trade-up.
Yep.
Laia Tulatu, who was an option for you guys yesterday, goes 14. A.D. Mitchell, 15. Byron Murphy, 16. Brock Bowers slips to 21.
Ooh.
I think there's a decent chance that he – I don't want to say 21 – I think he could get to around 15 just because of the cost savings. You're not really saving when you draft a tight end in the first round.
Plus, there's such a rush on quarterbacks, and there's going to be a rush on wide receivers that's why he's going to be pushed down a little bit. But now that you got Dalton Schultz locked up for 3 years, I don't think you're in the Brock Bowers market.
No chance, yeah. I don't think so. Maybe you could play some 12 personnel, stuff like that. Maybe that's your third option. Maybe instead of going receiver, maybe you just go a second tight end. You play a lot of 12 personnel.
Look, I think he's going to be a hell of a player. I just think with the needs this team has, they'd be better suited to fill some of the other holes that they truly have instead of a guy that they just signed to play the position.
I definitely wouldn't trade up for it. If he slips to you at 23 and he's by far your best player on the board, okay, we're playing a lot of 12 personnel this year.
Yeah.
Get ready to have Brock and Dalton on the field together with Nico and Tang. It's not the worst thing in the world.
No, it's not.
But I'm not trading up for it. If he falls to 23, okay, let's have a conversation. Chop Robinson gets picked at 22. So yesterday's winner of the poll is off the board just before the Texans select at 23. This mocker has the Texans going Kool-Aid McKinstry at 23. How would you feel about Kool-Aid to the Texans?
I feel really good. I just think that, again, going with what I want to see, which is that first-round pick going in the defensive direction and getting a guy that can play opposite of Stingley, that can replace Stevie Nelson, and or if you do somehow bring back Stevie Nelson or you get a veteran corner, here's a guy that you develop into being your other corner, I'm totally fine with it. I'd be happy with it, and I think that they'd gotten a good one if they get him.
I'm not a fan of it. He's got the broken foot, the bone in his foot. Terry Arnold, by far the best Alabama corner. I actually think Kool-Aid's more of a second rounder, so I would not like Kool-Aid at 23. Brian?
Hey, man. Nick likes guys with bad feet that play corner.
I used that joke the other day.
Yeah, I don't like guys with broken feet in their feet.
Yeah,
their
I did.
I don't listen to you.
I know, that's true. All right, so one yay, two nays. Here's the other three picks after that. Xavier Worthy goes 24. Troy Fatanu goes number 25, the interior lineman from Washington. And then Jackson Powers Johnson, the center from Oregon, goes number 26. So McKinstry, Worthy, Fatanu, Powers, Johnson. Who is your pick here, Blankers?
I'm going with another one against two. I'm sticking with the pick that I liked in the fact that if those are my choices, I'm sticking with a defensive corner that I think that the Texans truly need more than any of the other guys on this list. And so I'm going to stand pat, and I'm going to stick with Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid here. I don't want Kool-Aid here, so I'm gonna cross him off my list. I have a bias against record holders in the 40 in the combine because of John Ross, so I'm going to cross off Xavier Worthy. I wouldn't mind Worthy in the second round. I just don't like him at 23. So I'll cross off Worthy here. So I'm actually going to go with one of the linemen. The problem here is I feel like Juice Scruggs is more of a center than he is a left guard, which would tell you, okay, well, Fatanu, you draft him. He's your left guard next to Juice. But I think Jackson Powers Johnson's the better football player here. And if I believe in best player available, I'm not opposed to taking an interior offensive lineman. Juice was admirable at left guard. Let's develop you there. I'm going with Jackson Powers Johnson, the meanest son of a gun an interior offensive line had in the country, and he's going to be my starting center for the next decade. Jackson Powers Johnson, come on down. You're Branham's pick at 23.
Does that make you NFL GM of the year?
Again.
Yeah, executive of the year.
Executive year, yeah. You've won that lots of times. Yeah, I'm on a similar path as you. I would also avoid Kool-Aid. I don't like, you know, going into the season with guys with foot concerns. We've done that before. And obviously, I'm a big fan of Xavier Worthy, but I don't like kind of the redundancy of him and Tank together. I don't think I like the idea of possibly adding a wide receiver early in the draft, but I'd like it to be somebody that does something a little bit different than your two guys that you're relying on with Nico and Tank at the top of the wide receiver room. So I would also go offensive lineman, but I would lean Troy Fitano. So I would make that my pick here at 23.
Jeremy, I think one of the things that's interesting when you were talking about Worthy, and I thought BMAC was going to take his Texas guy, but one of the things that BMAC and I were talking about that I think it was yesterday's mock, what if Worthy doesn't slide to the second round because Kansas City takes him with the last pick of the first round and you put him in Kansas City with Mahomes? That's a pretty good fit for Kansas City.
Yeah, you get all that speed. I mean, is he going to be a good receiver or not? Like, he's really, really fast. Is he going to be a good receiver in the NFL?
But you salary cap casualtied MVS. So you get rid of Valdez Scantling and you replace him with Xavier Worthy, and look, his hands couldn't be any worse than MVS. I think that would be an unbelievable pickup for Kansas City at that point in the draft.
Yeah, if he's good. I think he's
better than Ross.
I do think Xavier Worthy works out. I know that, you know, guys at his weight until the last couple years, the odds have kind of been stacked against them. But we've seen over the last few years, look at Devontae Smith, look at last year's wide receiver class with some of the guys like Josh Downs who came into the league and played well at times. The wide receivers, for the most part, are getting smaller and smaller, and I don't think it's the same concern that it was in the past. You don't need the 6'2", 220, or 215 type of wide receiver. And I would also say Xavier Worthy broke out really early at Texas. He wasn't a guy that just suddenly got better in his last year. He was dominating as a freshman, as an 18-year-old, in games against Oklahoma, some of the best competition he faced over the course of the season. So I think he's a special enough athlete to be able to dominate guys 3-4 years older than him at 18 years old, that I think he's going to be able to translate to the NFL.
The early vote, Kool-Aid McKinstry, 61%. I feel like he's going to run away with this because of positional importance here. 713-780-ESPN, who would be your pick of the four? When we come back, the worst takes of the week. Bad Take Boulevard, who made the list this week? I got an ESPN 97.5 personality that joins the fray. Bad Take Boulevard with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at MyBookie. MyBookie, best in the business at taking care of their customers and giving you a safe place to play when you want to put money down and get your gambling on. It could be sports, which obviously they got going all the time. There's live in-game betting. There's NHL. There's Major League Baseball. There's college and pro basketball, soccer, UFC, and so much more. Golf as well. They've got all the sports. And the biggest thing is, because you listen to us and I recommend you use them, if you use our promo code BET975, you can truly cash in. Because right now they're doing it again, whether it's a new sign-up bonus when you sign up for the first time or a reload bonus because you're adding money to your account as an existing customer. When you put anything in from $50 to $1,000, they'll double it and you'll have more money in your account instantly. You want to sign up a friend? You get a bonus as well. Always remember our promo code. Use it whenever you can. BET975. That means you can cash in literally, because it almost instantly you will see if you put $100 in, $200 in your account. That means more money in your account, more games you can bet on, more chances to win. And I also said gambling, not just on sports, because when there's no games going on or you feel like playing some casino games, live dealers are standing by. You can do everything from poker and blackjack to other casino games, and you have the benefit of doing all of it from the pleasure of your own home. Do it in your boxers if you want, but you can do it and be safe with the people at MyBookie. Check them out today. Use that promo code. As I always tell you to do, bet anything, anytime, anywhere. With the only place I tell you to do it, it's mybookie.ag, promo code BET975.
Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
This is everybody's favorite segment of the week. Bad Take Boulevard. Who are the idiots that make the list each and every week? We have an illustrious list today. This one from the NBA. Here's why Gilbert Arenas, Agent Zero, he's made a lot of questionable decisions in his life. But here is Gilbert Arenas is with an idea on how to fix NBA defenses.
I know what they can do.
get rid of all the Europeans? What? You go to college to learn defense. Yeah. What college do Europeans go to?
I'm with you. No, I just
right?
get rid
they
of
them. They don't go to college whatsoever. Yeah. They have no athleticism, mm-hmm. right? They have no speed, no jumping ability. They are a liability on defense. There's 150-year-olds in the league today. Name the top 10 defenders. Rudy Gobert and Greek the Freak. Other than that, they're just offensive players. They're not defensive players, right?
Those two are like the best defenders, though.
Gobert, and this should be on the bracket. Gober. It's so bad.
It's funny. So I'm here for the entertainment of this because it is funny. And I like takes to be entertaining. I don't need them to be right or wrong. But it's a bad one. It's certainly a bad one. So Gilbert Arenas.
Awful.
You make the list.
You just made the list.
There's a lot of Europeans that go to colleges now, too, by the way.
Yeah. Take a look at Kansas. Take a look at Arizona. They've got a lot of talented foreign players that can play.
That's so funny, though. I want to listen to Gilbert Arenas now because I heard that.
Oh, my God. That's off the rails. And by the way, he's getting a pass. That's a – oh, boy.
Yeah. Borderline
racist?
It's definitely borderline. It's definitely borderline.
Why? I mean, it's definitely racist, but why is it like...
That's what we're saying. That's what we're saying.
But why... But, I mean, a lot of times racist comments aren't mean or...
No, I mean, I wasn't offended by it as a white man with European heritage, but it definitely was funny.
It's teetering. It's tiptoeing on the line. And I think if
it's definitely racist, but a lot of times you can it very much brings in their race. Like he's saying, he said that to get rid of Europeans to fix NBA defense.
It's ridiculous. Plus, it's what I've said forever and a day. Has he seen AAU basketball in the United States lately?
No kidding.
The European players get a lot more training on defense than AAU basketball players do.
I agree with the point he made about like, hey, go to college to learn defense. But a lot of these players are getting drafted now. They don't even go to college. They go to the G League. They go to Overtime Elite.
Yep.
They get drafted.
Look at the Rockets roster with Amanda Thompson and Jalen Green.
Yeah.
They never went to college.
Well,
and a lot of colleges don't even coach defense anymore. You see some of these SEC games are like 120 to 108. Like, some of these colleges don't even coach defense.
Nope.
So I agree with that part, but the get rid of the Europeans, what a great line. How do you fix defenses in the NFL, or the NBA? Get rid of Europeans. The next one comes from an ESPN 97.5 personality. I won't tell you the name, listener. Guess it real quick. And here was the take talking about the Los Angeles Lakers franchise.
Because that's how the Lakers do well. It's like people just want to play for them for whatever reason.
I guess. It's an overrated franchise. All right, what is your overall approval rating of Dana Brown? That's next here.
That's quite the statement for a moment.
Okay,
that's quite the statement coming from a Bulls fan. That organization has blown and post Michael Jordan era. And I'm standing up wearing a Celtics jersey. I'm standing up for the Lakers. What are you talking about?
Well, part of it
overrated
if the Lakers are overrated, what are the Bulls and Celtics?
They're fine. I'm just saying, like we talk about the Lakers, we talk about all these franchises, fine. Like they're still winning championships every single year. I'm not saying
they want a bubble title.
I'm not saying that their past is overrated. It's not.
But they have 17 titles. Like,
I know,
that's insane.
But we talk about them today like they're still that team, and they're just not. They're not.
They won in 2020. They won.
But they have LeBron.
They won a big championship.
09 and 10.
They have Anthony Davis.
They won three in the 2000s. They've run in every decade.
You can't walk that one back, buddy.
My favorite thing about that is he goes. They're an overrated franchise. Coming up next, Dana Brown.
Yeah.
Like, he drops a
duck
pipe
and run.
Bomb. He drops a pipe bomb and then immediately tries to get to the Dana Brown segment where he's, diarrhea of the mouth. And Paul and Sean are like, hold on a second. Yeah, so Joe George, you made the list.
He walked
you
it back.
You just made the list.
Like a segment later. They wouldn't let it go.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
He ended up walking it back.
Yeah.
He needs to stop. The texter's right. He needs to stop walking back these takes.
How many,
make a
how
stance
many
like
takes
that. Just
do you
stay
think,
on it.
How many takes do you think Joe gives before? That he says it before he's thought about it.
Not much.
Yeah,
not much.
I would have to say that Jeremy's correct.
I think he just says top of mind, and then he has to try to rationalize it later.
Yeah, they're tied for the most NBA titles ever. 17 with Boston.
And as Sean's pointing out, it's not like it was just one title here and there. It's every decade. Yeah.
You're in Southern California. You have LeBron James. You've won three titles in this decade, in this since 2000. You constantly are an attraction for any player that wants. From 2000 to 2024, I think they've won three titles.
No, they've won six.
Since 2000?
Yeah, they three-peated. Six. They three-peated in 2000, and they won back-to-back 2009 and 2010, and then they won in 2020.
The bubble title, yeah, in 2020.
Oh, my God.
They won six since 2000. More than anybody else since 2000. More than Golden State, right? Golden State has
six in the last 25 years. I mean, it's a lot.
What have you done for me lately?
Pretty
a
successful.
Lot. More than any other team successful. In the NBA. Oh, man, that's a good one, Joe. Mike Tannenbaum, who's a really good friend of the show. We love him. You know, really a bundle of joy.
High energy.
Super high energy. He has a hot take on these rookie quarterbacks.
If he had played for LSU, what would his stats look like? They look a lot closer to Jaden Daniels. If Jaden Daniels was at Michigan, his stats would look a lot closer to J.J. McCarthy. And that's where this debate is so much fun and so interesting. But he could do everything. Like, that workout shows he can make every throw.
Mike Tannenbaum, I don't know how he ever got the job. I don't know how he's ever.
He still wants Russell Wilson to sign up to be Aaron Rodgers' backup.
For $1 million a year.
Sheesh. Yeah, I don't know how this guy ever was a general manager.
Just completely dismisses what Jaden Daniels did as a Heisman winner.
Like, I get it. I get what he's saying. Like, hey, two different schemes. Michigan runs the ball a lot. LSU threw the ball a lot. But to say that the numbers would have been the exact same as the Heisman Trophy winner, and I'm just anti-Tannenbaum, man. Anti-Tannenbaum.
Yeah, he's kind of a fuddy-duddy.
Yeah, let's go with fuddy-duddy.
Yeah.
You just made the list.
Make the list. And then final one here, we have to put the texture that we had earlier. We're usually kind to the Hive. And the Hive, we want you to be mean to us because we make a segment out of it at the end of the week. But we had a texture earlier asking us, would you trade C.J. Stroud for Justin Jefferson and then pick up Russell Wilson. I wanted to say Russell Westbrook for whatever reason. Russell Wilson as a quarterback. So Stroud for Justin Jefferson and then sign Russell Wilson as your QB. Sorry, Texter, but you're not trading the best rookie quarterback we've seen in quite some time. Rookie contract. I love Justin Jefferson as a player, but you're not trading a franchise quarterback for a franchise wide receiver.
Are we putting our boy Pena on there too?
For the J.J. Watt thing?
Yeah.
We can throw him on there.
In their prime, and J.J. Watt's not good enough?
Yeah, J.J. Watt just wasn't good enough in his prime.
Sheesh.
To be the pick. So, Pena, we love you, man. But we don't discriminate on Bad Take Boulevard. I put my mother on the list. I put my wife on the list. I put my son on the list. We put the blind guy on the list. We don't discriminate.
We think.
We don't discriminate
legally
on Bad Take
blind.
Boulevard.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he called.
But we don't know.
We do know he can hear.
Yes.
We do know he can hear.
Yep.
We think he can't see.
But he dialed.
He died?
He dialed. He dialed the phone.
Well, phones have Braille.
Okay.
For the blind.
We just don't know. We didn't have any verification that he was completely blind or legally blind.
We should roll by his house and see if he sees us.
Let me know how that goes.
Cougars win a championship in the Big 12 in year one. What does this stack up to as some great accomplishments in recent history in this city? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Brannan.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
He's Blank, I'm Brandon. We are the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-ESPN. Junior Bronco says the second Stump got a promotion and left the Killer Bees. He's gone off the rails. Needed J-Bone and Blankers to keep him in check. I think Paulie and Mates do a good job keeping him in check. They didn't let him get away with that hot take.
Oh, there's no doubt about the fact that they were on it immediately and they had the backup in their back pocket and brought it out with stats. It was great.
He tried to run to break. He's like, yeah, that was a hot take. I better get out of here as quickly as possible. And they're like, not quite yet. That was well done. 3227 are Harden and Carmelo of European descent.
That's a good call.
Talking about arenas, that's a really good call.
Steph Curry could be on that list too because he doesn't play much defense.
I think he's just kind of limited though. You know what I mean?
Well, but that's what I'm saying. But if you are the focal point of coaches, of who to go at and who you want run switches on, because he can't, whether it is his limitation size-wise or otherwise, he struggles to defend people in the NBA.
Yeah, that's true. Corey, Dwight, Kobe, and Garnett, all straight out of high school and some really good defenders. Defense is just taking a backseat in the NBA. That's a really good point there, mm-hmm. Corey, as well. Houston winning the Big 12. Defeating UCF yesterday. Iowa State can tie them. They could both hang a banner, depending on what happens Saturday. Houston looking for the outright championship as they take on Kansas.
I think from the environment, the chance to get revenge on them, the fact that, you know, that's a team that's been squawking at you and trying to, and their fan base has been squawking at you all year. I think that's a massive, that's going to be a fun game.
Yeah, from all those perspectives, 100% I agree. It doesn't really influence your season one way or another. It's kind of what I was saying.
No.
Yeah, but you're right. Like all the storylines.
No,
there.
It does. If you do you think that they have a chance to still be the number one overall seed?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that adds even more to it.
But we've talked about this a lot. Like, I don't think the difference between the one overall seed, the two overall seed, and the three overall seed really matters this year because of where the regions are. And then who the teams are that are currently, you know, fighting for those. Because you have, you know, UConn, Purdue, and Houston have all separated themselves. And then when you look at the regions, like, it makes sense that Houston would be in the South because that aligns with Dallas. And then you have the Midwest for Purdue. I forget exactly where that regional is at. And then you have UConn up in the North or the East, one of the two, whichever one it is.
So, yeah, like, no, I was just saying, like, if you just want to, like, put another bullet point on all the accomplishments of this first season, being able to say that you were the number one overall seed, your first year in the Big 12 with all the other accomplishments would be pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose that's true. Yeah, because you have the three regions that, like, Houston, UConn, Purdue are all, like, 1A, 1B, 1C, when you look at it from a resume perspective. Purdue's going to go to the Midwest. Like, that's going to be Detroit. Yep. Like, that they're going to go there. The East is in Boston, UConn's going to go there, and then the South's in Dallas, Houston's going to go there. So, like, the difference between being the one overall seed and the three overall seed, like, isn't going to matter a whole lot from a regional perspective. Now, whenever you start to, like, they're supposed to snake it as much as they can, whenever you do all of the seedings, whenever you put everybody in the tournament, that's, to me, where it could have the bigger impact. But that's more matchup-based than actual, like, okay, you have the third, second seed versus the first, second seed. Like, give me the better matchup between the two more than which one is better. Todd, the show says it's similar to what the Astros did whenever they started to run through the American League. That's a good point because the Astros got switched up to the AL. Now, they were bad in the AL early. When they got put in the AL, they were bad those first few years. But then when they got good, they become the most dominant American League team in baseball despite being new to the American League.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think that it's just from just the overall, you didn't have those down years like the Astros did. The overall level of impressiveness, it's one thing to say that it wasn't just the AAC when they were in the American. It's the fact that once they got into the actual dance, that they went deeper and did all these things that they've been able to do. And now with a tougher regular season conference schedule where it's the gauntlet of college basketball, you didn't just compete in it. You won the damn thing.
Yeah. Coug Blaze, how does Samson approach the Big 12 tournament? Think the reserves will get more minutes? Well, there's not many reserves left because they're all banged up. But it will be interesting. Like, I think that we put way more weight on conference tournaments than the actual people who make the brackets. Because we're like, oh, if they win two games in the tournament, they're going to go from being a bubble team out to a bubble team in. They look way more at the total resume than they do like one or two games in a conference tournament.
Yeah, and I think that, like you said, because that number one overall seed isn't as impactful as maybe as it could be in other years, and the fact that they are dinged up, that I don't think it's going to – I think they're going to be a one seed no matter what they do in the tournament, and I think that they have to get healthy so that they can do something in the actual tournament. I would – Kelvin's not giving up anything. He's not going to, sit back on it by any regard, but I don't think he's going to push a lot of his guys knowing that he's already pretty much set where he's going
to
be.
Yeah, I tend to think the same. I'd be curious, but they just don't have many options. Like, they don't really have a very, deep bench. Everybody's hurt. So you're kind of – I think that they're going to maybe reconfigure minutes here or there, but it's also not in their DNA not to go compete. So it'll be interesting. But yeah, Houston looking for the outright championship Saturday against Kansas, locking up a piece of the championship with a win yesterday. They're going to hang up a banner. Big 12 champions in year one. Quite the accomplishment for Houston. 713-780-ESPN. You get one, Blankers. You get to decide between one defensive player. Are you picking a defensive end that gets you 12.5 sacks, or are you picking a defensive tackle that gives you 9? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.